All right, then. So here we are, worldwide live through BBS Radio. It is Monday, the third day of October 2016. Myself, my name is Gijs Minderhout. I'm located in Megalia, California. It's as usual a simulcast with a conference call. We have a bunch of people on the phone. Every time you hear a ding, which I will turn off here shortly, that is another person joining in. I welcome those that just got on board last minute.
Hello.
If you want, please say your name and location.
Kylene in Las Vegas.
Welcome to the call.
Roger in Austin.
Welcome to the call, Roger.
Bonnie in Corona.
Welcome, Bonnie.
Hello, guys.
Chris in Memphis.
Hello, Chris. Welcome to the call.
Hey, guys. What's up?
All right, man. A beautiful day. All right. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
This is Don in Northern Ohio. Hi, how are you, everybody?
Good evening, Don, and welcome to the call.
Thanks.
All right. All right. Helicopter, and there it landed. Good evening, Wynn.
Hello, Hives. How do I sound today?
You're different, not too bad.
I'm different.
Yep. You sound like reborn.
Did you get cloned?
Oh, no.
Reborn?
Cloned.
I mean, I sound good, in other words.
You sound, it's a little off. Not bad.
A little
yesterday,
off.
Yesterday? Not as good as tomorrow.
Better than yesterday, not as good as tomorrow. Okay. All right.
So, we are live on BBS Radio, and again, I welcome all those who are listening to us. Then I'm going to turn off the dings. All right, I bet you can talk 2 hours tonight about the topic.
Well, I am going to try to contain it within an hour, okay?
All right.
Let me just say, those of you that are on the call, not on the Internet. Are we on the Internet now?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Those of you that are on the call, if you want to stay a little longer and ponder the question, and I might keep this recording, because this might be a good introduction for other people. You know, many of you who are regular listeners have gone through your own process of vetting the work we're doing and had to come to the conclusion there's something here and you keep coming back.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
I'm going to start vetting this, how I came to the conclusion.
You're not recording that, okay?
No, I don't want to record this, okay?
Just want to check.
And then some of you that can verbalize it, if you want to, I'd like you to come on at the end, and I'd like to get it on recording, how you vetted it, because it might be a good tool to introduce things to other people. Because people come in sometimes peripherally, and they hear something about it. And, if they don't come into exactly the right conference call, it's easy to dismiss us as crazy or a cult or I'm a megalomaniac. These are some of the things I've heard. what else? So then this might cause people to search further or give them the motivation to read the book. If I get it right, and I hope I get it right, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I pretty well know my own story, so I thought it would be a good tool, might be a good tool to use, okay? So, on that note...
And then, hold on, can you do anything on your mic, because it's not the greatest?
It's not the greatest?
No.
Well... I can call call back on Skype, okay? And Skype usually has better audio, but sometimes, not always, but sometimes,
it has those glitches in there, you know, as it had yesterday also, which is not that big of a deal.
Well, let's see. I'll leave this line connected. So if for some reason you think I should come back to it,
yes,
I will, and I'll call on Skype, okay? So hang on just a second.
I know your own end, okay? All right. So as we are waiting for Wynn to find a different way, actually, he has a way to come on board through a different line over the internet. To improve the sound, because listening to a whole hour to like a little bit, you know, lesser quality can be quite annoying. All right. So again, I welcome all those that are joining in online through BBS Radio, and I see we had also more callers on the conference call joining in. Thank you so much for being here. We will be taking off in just a moment. I want to share that you probably all know, but for those who don't, we have a gathering on, I mean, same like tonight, a conference call with a simulcast radio show on the Wednesday evenings, same time as the Mondays.
Hello.
Hello, Wynn.
Wait a second. Is this better?
Yeah. Yes, but you're still on your mute your phone line, please.
My phone line is muted. Testing 1 2 1 2 1 2.
No, your phone line is still open.
It is okay. Hang on. Okay, now it's muted. How's that?
Yes, better.
It's better than the phone line, right?
It is, yes.
Okay. Well, let's... Hello?
Yep.
Okay, I see my voice down there. Let's get it rolling. Here we go.
This conference is being recorded.
This is October 3rd, 2016. Wynn and Terry in Sedona. This is one of our live conference calls. And let me just check. Terry, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. I'm probably going to do most of the talking tonight. And I decided, we'll see how this comes out, to do a overview of all the things that happened to me that made me come to the conclusion that what I was doing was real and that it had benefit for other people. And doing this because it might be something that is a good introductory call or audio for people that are discovering us for the first time and wonder what's going on. So just a little bit of background on myself, and those who are regulars on the call who have heard this numerous times, so thanks for putting up and supporting the energy of this particular call. But I came from a background of being born in Philadelphia. I used to be a whiz in electronics. Even at 14 years old, I was getting commercial radio licenses. I was really sharp. I was building transmitters in my bedroom. I was talking to people all over the world when I would come home from school. And I was doing this when I was probably 14, 15 years old. And then I went to college at the University of California at Berkeley to be a physics major, which I thought was my aptitude, and I quickly got bored with it and I started writing music, and I said, this is much more fun. And I had a rock and roll band in Berkeley. We used to play in small clubs. And then I came to the point where I was reading spiritual metaphysical material. And initially, I was very skeptical of all of it. I used to identify myself with being an agnostic, which means I can't really believe something unless I can prove to myself that it's real. And then I discovered Edgar Cayce. And it was the first time that somebody was having this ongoing documented experience that passed my own scrutiny because of the way that he could consistently do medical readings on people and always come up with a diagnosis that was correct. And the people would often go to doctors afterwards, and almost always Edgar Cayce's diagnosis would be exactly the same as the doctor's. And then Edgar Cayce was recommending alternative cures, and they would work, things that no one had ever used before, and some of them were actually pretty crazy, okay? And so then he would talk about how a person's present life was determined by things they did in their previous lives. And he would tell people what they did and how it created the circumstance of their present life and how to correct it sometimes, what they had to do to fix their karma. And, of course, he did 15,000 readings. And I said, this guy was real. And I really went into it with a vengeance. I probably read about 20 books. And I had the question of, how did he do this? How could someone come through with all this information? And where was it coming from? And Edgar Cayce himself did not have a clue. He would go into a trance, and he would not even remember anything he said. And he gave credit. He was a fundamentalist Christian, and he gave credit as his source to being the Christ. Of course, he didn't explain what the Christ was. And at the time, I had not a clue, except I related it to, it must be have something to do with Jesus, but the tie-in was never really explained. So I started writing songs, I was in a band, and I decided I really wanted to know how the world worked. And I did something that was quite brave. I decided I was going to take my guitar. Oh, I should say that I also started doing astrology charts because my girlfriend at the time was an astrologer, and my scientific physics mind could not believe that astrology worked. And when I started doing charts, I was thinking that the way the person was interpreted in the chart was very accurate to the people I would do the chart for. And then I would occasionally meet someone who had a similar vibration to someone whose chart I did, and I would end up guessing their sign, which kind of blew my mind because I was in my own laboratory of my own life. I was internally validating that astrology worked. I did it more times than I could remember, but, you know, not just once, but not often, but sometimes. They had to kind of match up somebody whose chart I did. So at that time, I did something brave and crazy. I said, I'm going to cast my fate to the winds. I was going to take a bunch of astrology books and my guitar and start hitchhiking. And I remember thinking to myself, if there was a God, then he better help me, because I only had like $50 in my pocket, and I needed to do something while I was on the road to make money, so I would do astrology charts and play music. And that trip was the most significant thing I ever did in my life up to that point, because I discovered synchronicities. I was having constant, impossible events, impossible at least by all the reality systems that I had known up to that point. I was having constant synchronicities, miracles of perfect timing. And one of them that was happening was that when I would hitchhike, I'll give you an example, a couple would pick me up, and the guy was Taurus, and the woman was Aries, and they'd drop me off, and then I'd wait 2 hours for a ride. The next car that would pick me up would be a Taurus and an Aries, and it would happen for 2 or 3 days at a time, and then it would switch. It would be not always a couple, even a single person. I was definitely attracting different people on different days. And my ability to guess people's signs was increasing. And occasionally I would guess somebody's birthday. And what happened was I was aware of my own chart. And when somebody would be in my presence that had a certain vibration to me. In other words, a really good example was my Venus was in 6 degrees of Gemini. And if somebody was born on May 28th, they would be, especially a woman, they would be 6 degrees of Sun. And that it created this huge energy flow with me and them. And I could feel it. I didn't have to say anything. I could feel the energy flow. And I would start swooning, especially if it was a woman, because that would be a aspect, 6 degrees of Gemini, and a person whose sun was 6 degrees of Gemini would be a very romantic connection. So I would swoon, and I probably was traveling around the country for at least 3 to 4 years. And I got better at it. When I started out, I was just hitchhiking, and then at various times I had a car. And then I would start playing music in little coffee shops everywhere. And I was doing really well. And I was writing songs about the synchronicities I was having. I didn't call it synchronicities, but I realized, without a shadow of a doubt, that there was an overlay of energy that I was tapping into. And I could feel the energy. Other people could feel the energy. And it was like I was being divinely guided through this whole process. And I knew there was more to everything than met the eye. And I had let go. The reason I was having this, when I look back to it in retrospect, is I had let go of all the things that keep me in this reality. I had let go of a future. I had let go of a career. I had let go of looking to get married. I let go of everything, and I totally trusted the universe, and nothing was holding my vibrations back. And I started moving in a vibratory field. It's the only way to describe it, that I didn't believe was possible. And yet I was having the experience every day. And then my music got good enough that I thought I could be successful at it. And I decided to go to Hollywood. I moved to Hollywood, and I was going to try to get my songs recorded. And I still kept having synchronicities. I met people in Hollywood. For example, there was a guy who managed a band in Greenwood Lake, New Jersey. And I was playing at the discotheque there in between the bands. And when I went to Hollywood, I went to a songwriter showcase, and there was that guy. And he came to Hollywood because he wanted to upgrade his own career. And instead of just managing a little band, he wanted to succeed in the music business. So his name was Mark Gilliton. And I ended up getting a couple of songs recorded with a very famous publisher, producer, through Mark. And then Mark got a job with Brian Holland, who was the guy who wrote music for the Supremes and the Four Tops. I ended up getting an introduction to Brian Holland. And Brian Holland and I had an extreme amount of synchronicities happening. And I was sure I was going to be successful. I was getting synchronicities similar to what I had on the road. And I had some songs recorded and all kinds of things that were potentials. And then I had a song get stolen. And it became a huge hit. And I freaked out. And up to that point, I thought God was guiding me. I had no other explanation for my synchronicities. And suddenly, I went through this very dark period. I didn't trust anybody. My life fell apart. And I, out of desperation, I ended up selling sunglasses on the street, which led to sunglasses at swap meets and street fairs. And I actually met Terry in that period of time. And she actually worked with me. She ended up going with me. And my intention was not to start a new career. My intention was to go back to music. It seemed like the very best thing I did, and the way that I would touch people. And I was getting a great inner reward for reaching people. But 25 years later, I was still doing the same thing. And I said one day at the end of a fair, that what am I doing if I have to do this for the rest of my life? I'd rather die now. And I started writing poems. I had written poems previously, and I started writing again. And I started writing about street fairs. And God knows what. And I started posting my poems on the internet, and they were going up on poetry blogs, and I was getting great response. People were emailing me, telling me they had my poem on their refrigerator, and so I was going to reinvent myself and be a poet. I said, no one's going to steal poems, and you know, I kind of made a little poetry book, and I sold a few copies, and I sent a poem to this one metaphysical magazine who asked me if I would like to write on assignment. That means they were going to give me topics or people to interview, and I would have to write based on what they assigned me. And they were actually going to pay me like $150 an article, okay? So I thought, wow, I'm out there. I'm reaching people. And at one point, I sent poems. Well, while I was in the midst of writing articles for this magazine, this online magazine, and I ended up interviewing people like Greg Braden and Uri Geller. And I wrote an article about Ram Dass, if some of you know who Ram Dass is. About 6 months into this, I get an email from someone who was linking to an article on the internet about Sai Baba having sex with his male disciples. And Sai Baba was this guru figure in India. And I clicked on the link to see who had written that article. God knows why I clicked on it, but I did. And I ended up on the website of David Wilcock. And he was posting all kinds of things. He was posting readings that he had done. And in one section of his website, he had a thing called the Edgar Cayce Connection. And in that section, he went through all of these things that connected him to Edgar Cayce. But he never said he was the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. But I read all of those things that he had posted. I had read enough Edgar Cayce to think if he's telling the truth, he has to be the reincarnation of Cayce. And at which point, I started studying him, studying his readings, and everything was coming up like he had to be Cayce. Now, Cayce had predicted that he would return in 1998 and may be a liberator of the world. And this was November of 1997 that I had discovered Wilcock, and he knew that he was Edgar Cayce at the time. He knew it, but he didn't say it on his website. He was scared to say it, which I don't blame him, because when he finally did say it, when I started writing the book, he got so much gas for being an egomaniac and trying to tie himself to someone famous. So what happened was I called the editor of the magazine I was writing for, and I said that I think I found the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And she then went to Wilcock's website and said, he looks like some kind of kook to me. I think wacko was the word she used. And I said, well, he may be a wacko. And I mean, he did look like a wacko. And he would be saying things, don't worry, we're getting them rent paid today. We're still going to keep our site up. He was living on a very delicate hinge, trying to put stuff out and pay his bills. And she told me, you can interview him, but I'm not going to promise to run the interview until I read it. So I contacted Wilcock. I interviewed him, and I turned it in. And this is still on the web. You can go read the original interview. It's just do a search. Winfrey David Wilcock, Spirit of Mott. That was the name of the magazine. Spirit of M-A-A-T. And she called me back and said, oh, my God, you're right. He is most definitely Edgar Cayce, and I think you're supposed to write the book about it. And I never thought of writing the book at the time. My life was not in great shape. I had come to the conclusion that I didn't want to go out and sell things at street fairs anymore, and that there was something I was supposed to do, and I was thinking I was supposed to be a poet. And the more I studied Wilcock, the more I said, this is really important. And I came to the conclusion that the source that was talking through him, who identified themselves as a group soul. They called themselves the Ra Group. They were giving this incredibly wise counsel and advice and explanation for this shift that we're in the midst of right now, that this group's soul, the Ra Group, was connected to Jesus. And Jesus is quite a mystery, because who was Jesus really? And just say the Father was speaking through him and he did all these things and he's documented. But that was not enough for my mind. I said, there must be more of an explanation for this if he's legitimate. Well, one of the quotes that's in the book, and this was only in one little section somewhere, that when I came to it, it said, "We came to you in our religion, mainly Christianity, but we don't often speak in those terms anymore because of the way religion screwed it up." And when I read that, I said, what are they saying? Do I believe that? I don't think I believed it, but I considered that it was possible. And I kept reading their channelings, and I looked at their positioning in the way they were addressing people. And I thought of Edgar Cayce believing that it was the Christ speaking through him. And I said, I think I'm writing a book. Now, I never said this. I never said it when I was promoting it. And I very rarely say it because people will attack this comment. But I had the idea that maybe I was writing a book with the current message of the same source that Jesus called Father. And I did a lot of cross-referencing and research on that after that to see if I could back it up. So I was really, I put everything else aside. I lived in my RV. I stopped doing street fairs. I lived on next to nothing. And I was writing the book in Starbucks and Denny's. And through the whole period of writing it, Wilcock was fighting with me. He was scared to have this book come out. He was scared to have the public reputation that he was the reincarnation of Cayce. And I think he fired me two times. And I knew Terry at the time. We weren't living together, but we were friends, and we could talk about deep things. And I would share with her what was going on. And she was watching it. And she saw that Wilcock fired me. And somehow or another, I picked it up, and we continued. And I probably was 3 years that I was in writing that book. And when the book came out, of course, Wilcock became, we just separated ourselves. He didn't want to represent himself to the world as the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And he decided he could reach more people through being a metaphysical journalist and researching conspiracies and manifesting as he's manifesting now. And I remember he was doing that, the beginnings of that already during the time we were writing the book. And in one of the readings, which is in the book, and David approved everything that was in the book. If he didn't want something in it, I wouldn't put it in it. In one of the readings, they said, David, let our message come through. We can stop disasters on your planet. Get your ego out of the way. And I'm not sure whether David did that or not, but my personal opinion is he didn't do it. And that he wanted the recognition for his own creativity and not to just be someone that was a mouthpiece for a channeled source. In fact, when I studied Edgar Cayce, I learned that Edgar Casey had a certain resentment for being a channel from somebody that had lived in his house. And they said that people would come over and nobody wanted to see him. They just wanted him to go into a trance and channel. And so Wilcock didn't want to do that. He wanted to have his own creative energies out in the world. So now, it's 2002. I had been working on this project for about 2 years. I think I initially ran into Wilcock's website perhaps in the year 2000. It's 2002, and I'm writing for this magazine, and I go to a conference in Monterey area. And I was in L.A. That was about 400 miles away. It was a New Age conference. It was called the Prophets Conference. And there were all these New Age luminaries there. And I went there to interview people. I went over with my editor, and I was making $150 an article. So I said, hey, listen, if I go to this conference, maybe I can interview 10 people and make $1,500. And she agreed. So I went there to interview people. When I walked in the door, it was Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there was this beautiful woman staring at me. And I looked at her and I said, do you know me from somewhere? And she said, you remind me of a writer that I had a crush on. And I said to myself, this is going to be trouble. So I told her, I'm a writer. I'm writing about the reincarnation of Edgar Casey. And she said, I love Edgar Casey. And then I said, well, let's get together. And the next day, we met in the lobby of the hotel where the conference was taking place. And we're sitting on a couch, and I said, so what do you do? And she said, I write poems. And I said, I write poems too. And then she said, I'm an astrologer. And I said, I'm an astrologer too. And then she said, and I play music. And there was a piano in the lobby of the hotel. And this was a scene right out of a movie. I called her over to the piano. And she sat down next to me on the bench, and I sung her one of my songs. It was a song called First Encounters of the Close Kind. It was about meeting a woman in a coffee shop, having a one-night stand, and she would become the love of my life. And I was playing that, and she was swooning. And then we got together again, and she told me she was married. And I told her I'm too old for married women. And she went back to her home in Silicon Valley, and she had a well-to-do computer entrepreneur husband. And I went back to my RV in L.A. And when I got back to L.A., there was a poem that she had sent me. Well, I sent her a poem back, and she sent me a poem back. And 30 days later, she left her husband, got in her car, and drove to L.A. And I'm living in my RV, and I said, okay, better go to Motel 6. And then we didn't have any money. I wasn't prepared to have a girlfriend or a partner, and she didn't support herself. So I booked this show in Portland, Oregon. And it was a 10-day fair called the Rose Festival. And we drove there, and it was pouring rain. And then we had the famous incident that I refer to, where I said, we did a prayer of protection for the rain, safe driving. And I said, does anybody want to talk to me? And again, she answered. And I thought she was joking because she knows I was writing the book. And I said, I asked them questions. They said, ask us questions. And after a few minutes, she said, that's the strangest thing that happened to me. And I had no idea what to make of it. 3 days later, we're in a hotel in Portland, and I asked her if she wanted to do it again. Of course, this was Daphne. And I took a tape recorder this time, and I said the magic words, does anybody want to talk to me? And she answered again, and I said, how come my girlfriend can do this? And they said, your girlfriend's from another dimension. She came here to bring these messages in. And then I said, how do I know she's not crazy? Can you guys predict a newspaper headline in advance? And then they said, watch for this headline, and the headline happened. Now, I was sure it wasn't her. I knew there was an intelligence talking to me. And for the next 6 months, I was asking some of the deepest questions I could think of. I had studied a lot of metaphysical things at that point, and I was asking the questions where I could not been able to answer them up to then. And then I was recording it all, and they said they were the Council of Elohim. Now, I didn't believe they were the Council of Elohim. I mean, I didn't know one way or the other, but I certainly wasn't going to believe it. I didn't know what the Council of Elohim was. I looked up the word Elohim on Google, came up with things like one of the names for God in the Old Testament, the name the Mormons used for God, the creators of the physical universe. And I asked them, excuse me, are you the same Elohim? And they said, we're part of the same. And I said, why are you talking to me? And they said, you're like a cosmic midwife. You know how to bring these things out into the world, and you don't have ego about it. Well, I had no idea what to make of that. I'm still trying to believe they are who they say they are. I'm trying to believe that how could I be talking to some force that created the universe? How could I be talking to something that was connected to the Old Testament, something that was connected to the Mormons? And, of course, why I still couldn't figure out why they're talking to me, even though they said I knew how to do this. And my life was a mess. I'm living with this woman. I'm trying to figure out how to pay the rent. She's going through panic attacks and going crazy, and she's going through this regret. How could I leave my rich husband to run around with you? And at the same token, David Wilcock was like, not only was he resisting having this book written, but I've talked to him about what was going on, and he went nuts over it. I was like looking, at that point, I looked to him like I needed some help. What do you think of this? And my feeling of the way that he was responding was, maybe this is something negative. And now the guy who is writing the book about him is having this experience with channeling. And of course, 4 months into it, I had that miracle with my sister, where she was going to die, and I asked them if they could help, and she had a miracle of healing. And I didn't dare talk about this experience I was having at the time, certainly not publicly, because it was already jumping off a huge diving board to writing a book saying that Edgar Cayce is back in the world, and now the same guy that's writing the book has a personal relationship that's channeling to him that says they created the universe and it's a name for God. I didn't think I'd ever get my book published. So I just said, well, we'll just see where this goes. I'm just going to work on the book and we'll see what happens. And then, of course, Daphne, after 6 months, just left. She said, I can't stand this anymore. And I called Terry up. Terry came over. In the middle of the night, she woke me up, and they said it was the same source. They never left me. And what I was doing was really important. And I am just perplexed. It was like I'm trying to believe this can't be real. I must be making a mistake. They must be making a mistake. But I kept asking questions. And when it first started with Terry, I asked him if I could ask some questions on behalf of some other people. So I called some people I knew up, and I said, you know, I'm talking to this voice that's channeling, and I want to ask him a question about you. Is that okay? Then I would go back, and I would ask a question. And they answered, and they knew everything about the person. Some of you who have heard us answer questions on Wednesday have had that experience. And I probably did this with four or five people, and I was just blown away. I said, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do with this? Well, we kept lingering along, clunking along. The book was released in 2004. And at which point, I ended up going to a expo in San Diego. It was called the Holistic Living Expo. And I called the guy up, and I told him about my book. And he was enthused, and he said, come on down, give a talk. And so I went down and gave a talk. I wasn't on their schedule. I just showed up, and he gave me a slot. And I remember running around the expo, putting up signs everywhere so somebody might come to my talk. I was putting, 8.5 by 11 stickers all over on the walls and in the bathrooms. And Terry was with me, and the room was packed. When I gave the talk, the room was packed, and that was with no advanced warning that I would be there. So I started talking, and I was telling just the story of David Wilcock and the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And as I was watching the people, I could see energy in the room. There was this energy dancing around their heads. It was moving, and it was really, really strong. And I had experienced that a couple of times previously. Sometimes when I was playing music and I made a really deep connection with an audience, I could see energy in the room. Not as bright as this, but there was something going on that was unmistakable to me. And that there was at least one teacher I had that whenever he gave a talk, I would feel this energy in the room. And the energy would kind of move through me, and it would clear my pain away. And I was amazed because I could walk in there all screwed up and scattered, and suddenly I was centered. Some of you experience this on our Sunday calls, okay? So I'm seeing this energy. People are rushing out of the room, and Terry is sitting at the table selling books, and she wasn't in the room. She sat at the table, and people were lining up to buy books, and they were raving. They were excited. They said, I could see auras in the room. I could see light in the room. That must be what people talk about. Well, when she told me that, I realized that I wasn't just having my own personal experience. Other people were feeling energy in the room. And we then did a channeling. And I asked them, I said, could you explain the energy that was in the room? And they said, that was us. We were helping you. Now, this was a whole new chapter on understanding my connection with this voice that said they were the Elohim. They were telling me they could project energy into a room and that it could uplift the vibration of the room. And so I had some other, I had kind of a carte blanche with this guy that was doing these expos because of my ability to put posters up and pack the room. And I would start doing various expos and giving talks. And I was kind of learning how to talk about the book. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how people were going to respond. But I wasn't talking about my own experience. I was just talking about the book. And then every time I would see the same energy. And after about 6 months of having that experience, and I thought it was an extremely positive experience, because people were feeling uplifted. People were feeling vibrant. They would come in and they would be dragging themselves into the room, and they would leave and they were lit up, as Terry saw when they lined up to buy the books. And I realized this was an amazing phenomena that was happening, that not only was I getting this extraordinary information about how everything works, I was getting this energy that they said they were projecting into the room, and I couldn't explain it any other way except that that's really what was happening. And then I asked them, I said, if I do this on a conference call, could you do this? Could you project energy to the people on the call and lift them? And they said they could. So it became an experiment. I had people that were on my mailing list that had come to my talks for the book, and I started to invite them to a conference call. And I started telling the story of what had happened to me. And I would do it over the phone. And then I would start playing back some of the channelings that we had done, which we had all done in private. And there was energy on the calls. And I probably did this for, I called it an experiment. I kept telling everybody, this is an experiment. I don't know how this works. I think highs came in somewhere around the tail end of me doing that as an experiment, and was on for quite some time afterwards. And people were having experiences. And occasionally, someone would have a miracle, and or they'd have a healing. And sometimes it was hard to say it was because of being on the call, or it would have happened anyway. And then Heise had an experience where he was still fairly somewhat new to the calls, but he had started greeting people. One time I was late, and he just took it upon himself to greet everybody, and then he never went away. He's still here. And he had his son that had warts on his hand, and he put it into the light, and the warts went away the next week. And I can't remember how long he had them, but maybe he'll tell the story at the end here. And then other people started having things. And then some people would go in the hospital and they had miraculous recovery from things. And after about 2 years of doing the conference calls with never, ever doing a live channeling, and it was scary to do a live channeling. It was scary because I already had the idea that it was possible for negative sources to come through in a channeling. And if I did a live channeling on a call and something negative came through, it would be hard to take it back. And the first time it happened was very spontaneously, and it happened with Daphne, where she hadn't been on the calls for a long time. And I invited her to come on a call and say, you should check this out. You should see what's happening. Because she ran away with her negative attacks. And part of her thought that maybe Wynn is doing something bad. And maybe this is evil. She comes from a Catholic background, so this was all kind of pretty out of the box for her, and she had a predisposition to think of things in terms of religiosity and good and evil, and she was being attacked, and she didn't know why she was being attacked. So eventually, she came on a call. I convinced her to come on. Look at these people. There was only a small group of people, 10 or 15 people.
Ben,
and I said,
we're about to go off the air with BBS. You want to share the phone number?
Yeah, if anyone wants to come on and hear the rest of this and hear some people, it's 641-715-3655. 641-715-3655. And the code is 172-746. So, so Daphne and I were in Brooklyn, and I had gone to visit her. Her father was dying, and she asked me if I would come, and I did. And we did this little TV show, some local TV show on cable, of a guy by the name of Mitchell, forget his last name. And we were staying in a motel in Brooklyn. And we were doing one of our conference calls, and she came on it. She hadn't been on it for a long time, but she came on. In the middle of it, she said they want to say something. And then they gave this amazing introduction to the call. And if you ever listen to the video, the YouTube, it's on intelligent-infinity.com. I put that introduction on that YouTube, and it was kind of a jaw-dropper, kind of compelling thing. And we continued doing the calls. I'm just going to bring this part of it to a close, so we keep it to approximately an hour. We kept doing the conference calls, and very few people, little people here and there. I didn't know how to promote it, and I didn't know how to tell people about it, but people were hearing about it. And finally, I ended up on George Norrie because I told the producer my story, and she put me on that night. Suddenly, we have hundreds of thousands of people paying attention, and, you know, there's been loads and loads of phenomena and good things and wisdom that I kept observing, and it just keeps proving itself. It's not like something to believe in. It keeps demonstrating itself. And if somebody is listening to this audio and is curious, please read the book, The Creator God's book, The Creator Gods of the Physical Universe Want to Talk to You, where I told the story in more detail, and I also have some of my questions that I asked them in the very first stages of me having this interchange, because I said to myself, well, if they really are the creator gods of the universe, if they really are the Elohim, let me just see if they can answer these questions. And then I started asking questions about what happens when you die, how do miracles happen, what is grace? And I have all those answers to those original questions. This was through Terry in that book. And somebody has to vet me. Somebody, you can't believe this the first time you hear it. You shouldn't believe it the first time you hear it because it's just too out of the box. And what if I'm a fake? What if I'm conning you? So we give all this stuff away for free. And what happens is so many of the people that start reading the materials, it starts to resonate, particularly if you're an old soul, particularly if you feel like you don't fit into this realm. There's explanations that make sense to the whole body of work. We have the spiritchannel.net, where we have probably going on to 1,500 of our conference calls, starting in 2009. And we haven't posted things before that, because we have sessions that go all the way back to 2002. So, I think that it is 7 o'clock. We'll bring this part of the call to an end. And I just hope to make somebody curious. I'm not a cult.